This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. The U.S. Senate is expected to confirm Brett Kavanaugh's nomination to the U.S. Supreme Court following the weeks of controversy stemming from the sexual assault accusations against him and attacks on his character as well as his temperament. AP's Warren Levinson tells us that this was all possible from votes that occurred on Friday.
Maine Republican Susan Collins became the decisive vote for Brett Kavanaugh, declaring him a qualified and objective judge.
My fervent hope is that Brett Kavanaugh will work to lessen the divisions in the Supreme Court.
Collins says she didn't see evidence to back up charges that Kavanaugh sexually assaulted a girl when they were teenagers. Joe Manchin of West Virginia announced he'll be the only Democrat to vote yes. Republican Lisa Murkowski of Alaska will vote no, which would make the anticipated tally 51-49. I'm Warren Levinson.
The Senate has yet to hold that vote. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo arrived in Tokyo Saturday. It's the first stop of his three-day tour of East Asia. He is holding talks with Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe and Foreign Minister Taro Kono. They are expected to cover Pompeo's visit to North Korea Sunday. Trade also will likely be on their agenda. In Pyongyang, Pompeo is expected to hold denuclearization talks from North Korean President Kim Jong-un and possibly talk about another summit with U.S. President Trump. The Nobel Peace Prize has been awarded to Denis Mukwege, a doctor treating victims of sexual violence in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and Nadia Murad, a Yazidi human rights activist and survivor of sexual slavery by Islamic State in Iraq. Both have been acknowledged by world leaders for their work to end sexual assault. More at voanews.com. This is VOA News. Aid agencies are gearing up for a major relief operation to help the survivors of the earthquake tsunami disaster in central Sulawesi, Indonesia. A 7.5 magnitude earthquake struck just over a week ago, killing more than 1,600 people, with death numbers continuing to climb. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Now that search and rescue missions are winding down, aid agencies are focusing on providing earthquake survivors with immediate and long-range relief. UN and international agencies are conducting assessment missions to pinpoint areas of greatest need. And the needs are great. An estimated 65,000 houses have been damaged or destroyed, with more than 70,000 people made homeless. The United Nations is appealing for $50.5 million to assist more than 190,000 people over the next 3 months. The International Organization for Migration has deployed 3 experts in disaster relief to Sulawesi to oversee its extensive relief operation.
Lisa Schlein reporting for VOA. The United Nations says it's seeking $50.5 million from the international community to provide relief for the 191,000 Indonesians affected by last week's earthquake and tsunami in central Sulawesi. U.S. First Lady Melania Trump saw animals and children during a stop in Kenya. AP's Ed Donahue reports.
The First Lady took part in a brief safari. Edward Lusishi with the David Sheldrick Wildlife Trust hopes this visit can send the message, stop trading in ivory.
The tusks don't drop off from an elephant. People kill the elephants to get the tusks.
The Trump administration recently decided to again allow Americans to import the body parts of African elephants shot for sport. From feeding baby elephants, the First Lady saw babies at the Nest Orphanage.
Thank you very much for your beautiful and warm welcome.
Next stop, a dance performance at a Nairobi theater. The First Lady wasn't afraid to get involved and got up to dance alongside audience members to the delight of director Octet Bell.
Yes, it was really nice to see her dance. I wish we could make her a Sarakasi princess, but I think she already is in our heart.
I'm Ed Donahue.
A new study is laying the blame for 2017's unusually high numbers of hurricanes on the Atlantic Ocean's warming surface temperatures. It is one of the first studies to suggest that human-driven global warming is actually causing more hurricanes. The study published in the journal Science also predicts that as warming increases over the next 50 to 100 years, we can expect on average about 2 more hurricanes every year than we get now. And not only will there be more hurricanes, they will be stronger and they will be wetter. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
In terms of results, because for you to wait for the last minute, that is a non-starter. Secondly, you know, to have an alliance, it is to increase your capacity to win.
Two opposition candidates form an alliance ahead of the Cameroonian presidential election Sunday.
They started with Diane, I guess, because they had a lot to gain by putting Diane in jail, including their business empire.
A Rwandan court grants activist Diane Rwigara and her mother bail.
Expecting people to recognize this is quite a normal and intelligent way of doing things. And by that process, we're not burdening our debt profile, we're not adding to our debt stock, because it's a matter of arrangement.
And Ghanaian President Nana Addo-Dankwa Akufo-Addo talks about building his Ghana Beyond Aid agenda. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Political parties have intensified their campaigns ahead of the Cameroonian presidential election Sunday. Incumbent President Paul Biya will be challenged by 8 candidates, but Akere Muna, an opposition presidential candidate, has decided to withdraw from the contest. This after endorsing his rival Maurice Kamto, the former Minister Delegate of Justice. Elvis Ngole Ngole, coordinator of the Academia for the ruling Cameroonian People's Democratic Movement, or CPDM, tells me President Biya will win re-election despite the last-minute opposition coalition.
The CPDM is the leading party, and because it is the leading party and the party in power, it sees itself as the party of the people, for the people, by the people. And it has a special responsibility to make sure that the election takes place within the bounds and limits of the law, and that before, during, and after the elections, the country will continue to march forward in unity and in peace, and that the president who will be elected, which is in our own home, the candidate of the CPDM, who is the current president, President Biya, will be, as he has always been, the president of all Cameroonians. So for the CPDM campaign, it will end at midnight tonight according to the law. We are carrying out a campaign of humility, a campaign of inclusion, and a campaign of peace, a campaign of concord and harmony.
But some people are saying that the fact that he has shared his responsibility of protecting life and property in the South should have disqualified him from even seeking re-election. What's your take?
Well, I don't say that making a false argument, because first, he has violated no law. President Biya is honest and humble enough to tell Cameroonians that he understands that there are problems and not everybody is happy. But he's willing and he's determined to refine and reform his policies so that those who have not got the benefits or the advantages as of this point will be able to get them in the next 7 years while he's there. So he's honest and he's humble. He doesn't pretend and he doesn't give false hopes and illusions as the other candidates are doing.
Some people are saying majority of Cameroonians are young. Why should an old person who has old ideas be still seeking re-election when there are vibrant youth who can lead the CPDM?
No, the answer that is very simple. Those who make that case seem to be ignorant about African tradition and culture. In African tradition and African culture, age is not a negative factor. Age is supposed to be a factor of wisdom. It's a positive factor. Secondly, from the standpoint of law, as you know, age is not a vision. And it's not a factor of progress or of change. No. As far as we are concerned, as long as the law permits, and there's no democracy without law, you must understand that law has as roots tradition and culture. So from a legal and constitutional standpoint, age is not an impediment, neither is it a violation of the law.
How credible do you think Sunday's election will be?
An election is credible when the citizens' freedom to choose
or to make their choices are not restricted by any other person. And this is what you have the case in Cameroon. Everybody is free to participate or not to participate, and nobody is restricting anyone's participation in any way whatsoever. So as far as the credibility is concerned, the ELECAM, which is the electoral body responsible for managing and organizing elections in Cameroon, is set. It has held meetings with the various political parties, and I think they are comfortable. I don't see where there's a problem, because I've taken part in several of those meetings with ELECAM and other political parties. And so all the 9 candidates are going in for elections because they have accepted the conditions, they have accepted the standards, they have accepted to obey the code of conduct, and they have accepted that the law has primacy.
2 of the candidates have decided to form an alliance to challenge President Paul Biya in Sunday's election. What do you think their chances are?
You know, an alliance in less than 24 hours before the day of the ballot smells like a kind of political opportunism, which has actually no value in law and no value on the ground in terms of political effect or in terms of results. Because for you to wait for the last minute, that is a non-starter. Secondly, you know, to have an alliance, it is to increase your capacity to win. Well, if it takes 2 political parties to have an alliance less than 12 hours before the day of the ballot, then I think the CPDM has an upper hand and an advantage, because the CPDM has had an alliance of over 20-something political parties more than how many weeks ago.
Elvis Ngolengole is the coordinator of the Academia for the Ruling Cameroonian People's Democratic Movement, or CPDM. He spoke with me from the commercial capital, Douala. A Rwandan court granted activist Diana Rwigara and her mother bail Friday. They were arrested for allegedly evading taxes, forgery, and inciting insurrection. But a 3-judge panel ruled that the prosecution has failed to provide reliable rationale why Diana and her mother should be kept in detention, and ordered their release. Until her arrest, Diana Rwigara, a government critic, attempted to challenge incumbent President Paul Kagame in the 2017 presidential election. But the Electoral Commission disqualified her over allegations of forgery. For reaction, I reached Gilbert Mwenedata, an opposition candidate who was also disqualified from running for president.
I can say for me it's really a great time and moment to know about the release of Diana Rwigara as well as her mother. And we've been really looking forward to it. So I really say it's a good news for us. And we really appreciate the efforts of everyone who worked together just to advocate for them.
Some people are saying although they have been granted a bail, there were conditions for their release, including them reporting to authorities about their travel plans and all that. So they are saying, in actual fact, they are not free. How do you respond to that?
Actually, they are not yet free, because normally, as there is no freedom for doing what they are supposed to do, I mean, like for Diana Rwigara, she is a politician, and she was in jail because she's a politician. So, as you say, with all those conditions, and I've been in Rwanda, and I know how many those conditions may be. So it's not easy for them really to say that they really have the freedom we want them to have, which would include even the freedom of movement as well as the freedom for expression, because that's the main reason why they have been to jail for more than 1 year now. So I also say they are not yet free, but at least we celebrate what is achieved by now. It's a good step in the right direction, and we will continue, all of us, to work together to ensure that they even get more freedom.
You have been working with others to have her released, but you also came close to Diane because you also wanted to seek election to challenge President Paul Kagame in the recent election. What happened that you were made ineligible to contest, and why is Diana in this position and you are not?
That's a good question. One, I can say what was the reason for both me and Diane not to be allowed to be actually presidential candidates. The main reason was the allegations which were on both of us, me and Diane Rwigara. According to them, they said we doctored like the signatures. So they said what we provided for the signatures of our supporters, that they were fake signatures, forged signatures. So now to your question, why her in jail and me not in jail now? Right now, I'm not in Rwanda. And by the time I was in Rwanda, of course, me too, the process to have me in jail was there. And they started with Diane, I guess, because they had a lot to gain by putting Diane in jail, including their, I can say, their business empire. So when it comes to me, probably for me to just to take away my freedom of expression, of course, they were to put me in jail because the investigations were, were already initiated against me. But when it comes to me, maybe when it comes to what kind of properties they may have taken from me and my family, they are not as many as those of the family of Rwigara.
When do you plan on returning to Rwanda?
Actually, it has always been in my mind and heart to find ways to get back there. I know it's like... It seems to me that the time is not yet ripe for me to be there. But as I always think about it and try to find ways to get there, I know I may not probably have to wait for everything I want to see there for me to get back there. So I will eventually go there. I cannot say when. When it comes to when, I really don't yet know. But I can just feel my heart and know that eventually I will have to get there. And I cannot really be specific when it comes to when, but I want to.
Gilbert Mwenedata is an opposition candidate who was disqualified from contesting in the Rwandan presidential vote. He spoke with me from Charlotte, North Carolina. Meanwhile, for more on the situation in Rwanda, my colleague Douglas Impuga reached David Himbara, a former economic advisor to President Kagame. He asked him what he thought of the recent development in Rwanda.
I put it for three main reasons. The first one is that General Kagame, the president of Rwanda, wants to appear clean to the international community. One reason is that he'll be hosting the Queen and Commonwealth in less than 2 years from now. So he has to appear somehow clean to be able to host the Commonwealth. That's one. Number two, General Kagame also is campaigning for his foreign minister to become the Secretary General for the Francophonie. So again, if they are to lead the Francophonie, he would want to appear less authoritarian and thuggish, a rogue state. He wants to appear somehow respectable. The third reason I would say is that Ethiopia is stealing the limelight from Kagame. Ethiopia now is the one that is seen as clean, freeing prisoners, engaging with opposition parties, making peace in the region. So Kagame, I think, doesn't want to appear to lose completely the limelight of the African leader that is often engaged with the U.S. and the U.K. and others. So that's how I would explain what appears to be his change of heart, which is very superficial, but nonetheless wanting to appear clean, relatively clean.
What does this one exactly mean for these brave women who stood up to challenge President Kagame?
In Gazire and now Diane and Adeline Rwigara, brave women, are freed. But as Kagame himself has said, after Ingabire was freed, she was not willing to lie low and keep quiet and obey the regime. She has continued to be active. In fact, she was even present when the Rwigaras were given bail. Kagame is not happy about that because he has publicly told her that if she doesn't keep quiet, he'll throw her back in jail. So these brave women, I don't think they are going to play his game. They'll continue their activity, and then we'll see what Kagame does with them, because I don't think that they're going to lie low.
As you say, as Mr. Kagame tries to portray a picture of tolerance and some democratic gestures, the government is getting tough on the media. How do the two now reconcile?
Well, you see, it's a patchwork of contradiction. On one hand, he wants to please the powers that be outside Rwanda. But on the other hand, you see, it's a leopard that he cannot lose his spots. No, he is a dictator. Once a dictator, he's always a dictator. He cannot allow free media. So it's a kind of toss-up between the two demands. His own demand of remaining ironclad ruler, and then at the same time wanting to please the outside world. It's impossible to strike the two.
What do you see happening in the immediate future? Do you see Kagame rehabilitating his picture internationally and then still maintaining a grip on the local governance, the local politics?
That's what is going to happen. But then we'll be watching closely Ingabire, because she's but Ingabire for sure is not lying low. She's been warned, and she's not apologetic about her demand for greater democracy in Rwanda.
David Himbara is a former economic advisor to Rwandan President Paul Kagame. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpuga from Toronto, Canada. Ghanaian President Nana Addo Dankwa Akufo-Addo has spent much of his time in office building his Ghana Beyond Aid agenda. Now he wants to expand that program across Africa. On his recent visit to Washington, D.C., I caught up with the Ghanaian president to talk about his goals. Among them, he said, is to quickly build an economy that encourages citizens to stay home instead of leaving to seek opportunity in other countries.
The wife of the President of the United States, a country with whom we have very good relations, and we're taking it that the President sending his wife to come and visit us is also trying to make a statement about the relations between America and then Ghana. So we welcome it very much. My wife is excited about the possibility of her hosting the U.S. First Lady, and so we can make sure that the 2 days she's spending in Ghana, I believe, are eventful and memorable for her and for us also in Ghana.
One of the most critical promises you made to Ghanaians is Ghana Beyond Aid. What is the time period to actualizing or realizing this vision? And do you think it is possible before you seek re-election?
There is, first of all, if you like, the mobilizing theme. Ghana recognizing that we have to do things for ourselves. We can't continue 61 years after independence to be dependent on foreign assistance. So if you are looking for indices, the indices are the steps we would take to reduce that dependence. When we're talking Ghana Beyond Aid, it's important that the world does not misunderstand us. We're not saying that we do not need partnerships. We're not saying that we don't need cooperation with others. On the contrary, what we're saying is that we prefer that we have relations with countries, say, like America, which are based on trade and investment, cooperation, rather than us sitting down and saying what USAID can do for us, what X other American agency can do for us, but that we have a relationship where our business people, American business people, are cooperating to develop businesses in Ghana and grow the Ghanaian economy, we're able to give jobs to our people. So that's the overall framework. But above all, it is a call on Ghanaians to lift up their heads to say, look at this country that we have. It has so much resources in the soil, in the ground, in our oceans. How best can we, harness all these resources so that we can develop our country quickly.
Some people have expressed concern that the recent contractual loans or barter system that your administration has entered into with China undercuts your vision of Ghana beyond aid. What do you say to some of your critics who say that?
I can't understand that with respect. I don't understand the thinking. What is this? What is being suggested that we are some little island all are by ourselves? We're cut off from international cooperation and exist, and that we don't have relations with other people? No, I think that on the contrary, the arrangement that we have had with the Chinese is one of the more creative and innovative things that our government has done in many, many years. Because what do you say? You are having access to a lot of money for you to attack one of your most important areas of deficit, your infrastructure, your roads, your railways. And that at the same time, the monies that you're getting are not appearing on your balance sheet because you're paying for it, not with cash, but with product. And we've made it very clear that in the arrangement that we're having with the Chinese, the bauxite that we're going to send to them is not raw bauxite or even alumina. It's aluminium products.
Okay.
That's a major advance where we're not, as always, then going to be handing over our raw materials for somebody else to treat and add value and then send back to us. On the contrary, we will be sending finished products to China to pay for, as it were, to pay for the facility that we're getting. I think it's a very creative idea. I would have expected people to recognize that this is quite a novel and intelligent way of doing things. And by that process, we're not burdening our debt profile. We're not adding to our debt stock because it's a barter arrangement.
That was Ghanaian President Nana Addo Dankwa Akufo-Addo. He spoke with me from Washington, D.C.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Oh.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA. Or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world.
Ah.
Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.
Hello. It's the weekend. You deserve something special. And I've got just the thing. Pan-African music with me, Heather Maxwell, on Music Time in Africa.
Yeah, more fire.
You'll hear exclusive interviews with Andy Jamea from Cameroon and Mamadou Kelly and his Desert Blues Band. Join me in my studio all the way from Timbuktu. Song of the Week features a hit song currently burning through Uganda. And there's so much more awesome music, you just don't want to miss it. So, sweeten up with me on Music Time in Africa. This Sunday at 15 and 20.500 UTC. Woo!
are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, the second Namibian National Land Conference ended in the capital, Windhoek, Friday. Delegates agreed on a number of land ownership-related issues. President Hage Geingob described the conference as a resounding success. This after calling for a constitutional amendment to enable his government to expropriate land to redistribute to landless black Namibians. For more about the land conference, I read presidential spokesperson Alfredo Hengari.
The president opened the conference with a clear message that Namibians must sit, discuss in a manner that is inclusive and try to find solutions to what is a very difficult question. This was a very bold decision on the part of the president because the problems that have been there have been known for a while. We've been struggling with resettlement. We've been struggling with willing buyer, willing seller. We've been struggling with new issues, new old issues such as ancestral land claims, which we could not resolve in 1991. Because we admitted at the time that they are quite complex.
Some people are saying the president's statement seeking constitutional amendment to enable the government to redistribute land or share land to majority black is just a mere publicity stunt because Article 3 of the Namibian Constitution said you cannot force anybody who has a private property to either sell or be taken away from them unduly. And therefore, this is just mere publicity stunt ahead of next year's election to Ghana vote for the SWAPO ruling party. How do you respond to such criticism?
I think that criticism is completely misplaced. It is true that there are calls on from some quarters that Namibia should go to a referendum to touch on the fundamental clauses in the constitution with regard to property rights. But that is not necessarily the direction that the president would like to go. The emphasis of the president is that we need to do something urgent, something drastic, to move away from the status quo without moving into a new republic. Because if we touch on the fundamental clauses of the constitution, it would mean suspending the whole constitution, and that is not where the president is. What the president is trying to do is to ensure that land justice is carried out in a manner that is orderly, that is predictable, and does not undermine the economic fundamentals of Namibia.
Some of your critics are saying that if the administration's policy of willing buyer, willing seller has failed, and the president admitted that it has not yielded the desired result, why should Namibians trust the government again to resolve some of these concerns about land ownership in Namibia because the government policy failed miserably, they said?
Let me assure you that the fact that the president has been the first to admit that the willing buyer, willing seller policy has not worked is a clear marker of wanting to disrupt the status quo, that a new dispensation when it comes to land is initiated. And that can only be initiated when Namibians come together, talk respectfully, and find a way out of some of these difficult processes. So this is where the president needs to be honest with you. It is not electoral. It is serious. There are people who depend on the land, and there are people who want to do something with land. We need food security. We need to fight poverty in this country. We need to end it by 2025. And this decision on the part of the president is consistent with what he has been trying to achieve ever since he became president in 2015.
Some of your opponents are saying that the president appeared to be under pressure by Namibians to act, and that this bold initiative you spoke about is neither here nor there because white farmers are known, they said, as the good users and planters and agricultural producers, and that taking that land away from them will basically sharply reduce the agricultural production in Namibia. How do you respond to that?
No, the president has been very clear about sustainable land reforms. The president has been very clear that Namibia will not implement land reform in ways that that would have dire consequences on the economy. So I think the example of Zimbabwe is less valid when it comes to Namibia, because the president is clear that it will be orderly, it will be within the framework of our laws. That is the direction the president wants to take. It is going to be difficult, but it's why the president called this conference, because he does not have all the solutions. It's for Namibians to find solutions that are implementable. And this land conference that has been convened is exactly going to do that. There are different people from all walks of life, different forms of expertise, that will try to shine light on what is a very complex issue.
Alfredo Hengari is the spokesperson for the Namibian president. He spoke with me from the capital, Vinto. The session of the UN General Assembly, or UNGA, is an opportunity for government ministers to meet their counterparts and to share best practices and concerns with leaders from the UN, the private sector, and the media. VOA's Adam Phillips met with Dr. Bernard Hofiku, Namibia's Minister of Health and Social Services, during a break in a conference on investment in Namibia. Dr. Hofiku began by relating some of the challenges faced by a southern African nation of some of 2.5 million people.
Being a developing country, we are still besieged with diseases that are afflicting lower to middle, even upper income countries. Malaria is still a problem with us. TB, that's why I'm here at a high level TB meeting. HIV is still a challenge with us, even though we are making inroads on those.
And what about non-communicable diseases in Namibia?
Non-communicable diseases are coming up. Stroke, heart attack, and cancer. Well, diabetic is still, we are at about 4% nationally. But it's going to come up because our people are moving to the cities. They are eating rather junk stuff, no longer organic and traditional stuff. They hardly do walk or any form of exercise, and smoking tobacco and abusing alcohol.
You mentioned traditional foods. I understand that traditional healers outnumber conventional doctors 4-1 in your country. I'm wondering if there's any alliance or even partnership between modern so-called Western medicine and traditional medicine, or folk healing, as it's sometimes called.
There are certain positive aspects of it, but there is a lot of that need to be regulated. We actually have a bill that's on the table to regulate traditional healers.
What is your view of it?
Everything requires leadership. Traditional leaders, they're actually the one that the people listen to more than us in the politics. If we empower them with the right knowledge, can actually even put your modern medicine with the traditional healer, and they will deliver them to the people. People have faith. So rather be innovative and change them to do the right thing. For instance, to provide sterility equipment for those that do traditional circumcision. And you know, we want as many men to be circumcised because of our HIV epidemic. So that's one area of collaboration we can do with that.
And what about so-called female circumcision, or what critics call female genital mutilation?
We don't support that.
But to be fair, don't some people see male circumcision as genital mutilation as well?
We don't see it as a genital mutilation. Circumcised men tend a 60% less chance of contracting HIV. But apart from that, studies are overwhelming that cancer of the penis is almost non-existing in men that are circumcised. And the cancer of the cervix in women whose partner have been circumcised is far less than those women whose husbands or partners are not circumcised. There's evidence, scientific evidence.
And what about mental health in your country?
That's one of the biggest challenges in Namibia. Most of our mental patients are on average 25 years old, and it's relating to drugs, alcohol abuse. And we're doing our best. We changed our law, which was set up before Namibian independence, 1973, to emphasize mental health services at community level, not just in hospital. It emphasized awareness promotion instead of just treatment. And when I say awareness, part of that is actually to destigmatize the mental health, to be seen like any other illness, for those that are afflicted to get the necessary support, not just from the medical staff, but by the community, by the family, by friends, for everyone to recognize that mental health is just one of those illnesses for which the person needs support, not just treatment. And obviously, It emphasized the building of capacity for those that need to be hospitalized in appropriate condition and to get the right medication.
Dr. Bernard Haufiku is Namibia's Minister of Health and Social Services. He spoke with VOA's Adam Phillips in New York. And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
Swali susa na kula, fanya wainama kisha rotate. Tuokunjishe na sura. Leo shimo limetema, meshinda beti.
Shinda beti.
Tuonyeshe sinema wakina feti.
Asajo, nijo.
I like it.
Wena chancho godo.
I like it.
Ajinkolo jinkologo.
I like it.
Kono la sotojo.
I like it.
Baby jo jo jo.
I like it.
Ajinkolo jinkologo.
I like it.
Tandani mwendo kwachu kwachu
kwachu kwachu
nichanganye waone niwe fiatu fiatu
fiatu fiatu
ili penzi walikome washakuna ku
shakuna ku
hey. Baby sankororo kerewa naija
soko soko
numoro malewa aija
roko noko
mi kwako shoti atakila lewa vimba
vimba
ukuchekeshe kama wakila.
Juzi la choko choko ninywe bakuli zima. Ole, mushedede mutu kutozame kwenye kisima. Ole, Fatuma we, Kishtobe, mwite Aisha miundo we. Alivyo nyonde nyonde kama kobe, nimshindue na miundo we. Kwenye kopa kabana, kukumwanana, kwa kugandana. Nimufake banana, kwa nadana, tukikandana. Baby papa saki chaju si kafiri ni safisha mtaro na univyo jazwa nyuma fungu mbiri nyanya za masaro
nijo like
una dancho godo
like
ajinkolo jikologo
like
kono la sotojo
like
baby jo jo jo
like
ajinkolo jikologo
like
kikupa jo godo
like
uno la sotojo
like
oya jibe bebe asa jibe.
Je la trouverai, il n'est jamais trop tard. Oh, comme un diamant noir pour le monde entier, elle sera à part. Mon aller à Punta Cana, mon aller à Casablanca, mon aller à Barcelona, mon aller à ma chérie, si tu savais. Ma vie c'est la bohème, pars avec moi si tu m'aimes. Je dois m'en aller, te dire au revoir mais sans te faire de la peine. Ah, 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 on verra bien où la vie nous mène. Ah, 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 si oui ou non tu seras ma reine. Pourquoi tu es si belle? Pourquoi tu m'en sorcelles? Avant de me brûler les ailes. Mais dis-moi comment tu.
Cana, Mona Lea, Casablanca, Mona Lea, Barcelona, Mona Lea. Je ne sais pas qui tu es, mais les étoiles m'ont mené à toi et je dois mettre les voiles. Je suis désolé, ne m'en veux pas, je ne suis qu'un homme qui jamais ne se dévoile. Oh, m'attends pas, oh ma bella, tu as le choix. Oh, oh ma bella, ne m'attends pas, oh ma bella, ne m'en veux pas. Mon aller à Punta Cana, mon aller à Casablanca, mon aller à Barcelona, mon aller à.
Baby, ya kwa munage, baby, ya kwa munage, chakalo.
Try send DM reply, come yes time, slow. Try 7 days, self you go weak, bro. So at them aside, this girl come, up a set of vibe, miss girl self. I don't see yourself, they did things in the smart, I be 16 years, miss girl son. Reason being, some girls think we are fools, I post one pic, tongue out, truth. Try hala see, I go bomb blast you, imagine your heart beat, congrats juice. This girl, those times I don't get sick, she will never ever kiss back. I feel better with Jamaica. She see me for Soho, I grab up a picture. Nice. Then time she did rush me. And every shiny wake him. That be how the world did. We don't want to see. Now time changes. Why?
Things said you all they revolve around your bumper. Things said you all they revolve around your big ass. Things said you all they revolve around your fine face. Pull up. Pull up, 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 pull up.
Yo, yo, you're on point. Don't know your love, but they can't find it. Everything is on point. I'm a Tony Bobby, don't on point. Mona Lisa, girl, you're on point. Don't know your love, but they can't find it. Everything is on point. I'm a Tony Bobby, don't on point. Mona Lisa, Mona Lisa,
Jules, baby, Jules, baby, Jules, baby, Jules.
You think said you all they revolve around your bumper. You think said you all they revolve around your big ass. You think said you all they revolve around your fine face. Pull up, pull up, pull up, pull up, pull up.
Miss Kelly, yeah.
me what designer. Them no bought me yesterday. I know say your love will cost you something. But you they do me something, something. You they do me like you gonna. I see the fire in your eyes, burning like a cigarette. Baby girl, are you from Ghana?
And that was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Saida Hamdoun, and our engineer for today, Justin Thwaite, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, if you have a sore on your leg, you don't go for an amputation to cure it. I'm your host, Peter Clotter, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.